This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress. From connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and my regular co-host Jason Calcanis is out, but I have an awesome fill-in. His name is Christopher Niblett. Chris is the founder of CarVenture, a car search engine-powered car shopping site. He's a former NASA software engineer at Marshall Space Center, Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. But he shifted gears, literally, and started working at a car dealership where he learned the ins and outs of the car business. But this is the first. I've never really had a listener turn into a guest or a co-host, but this might be the first time we have that happen. Chris, thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
I am very excited to be here. Thank you for having me. Have you seen the movie Rockstar?
No, I haven't. No.
With Mark Wahlberg from 2001. Basically, Mark Wahlberg plays a super fan who is goes to his favorite band's concert and gets pulled up on stage and eventually becomes the guitar player for the band. And that's what I feel like right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the way we kind of came in touch, just for the listeners, is that Chris is very active on Twitter, kept messaging me. Then he dragged me into Clubhouse for a little bit, and we had a conversation there. And you know, we just had really good dialogue, and I just wanted to bring this to our podcast because, you know, you have a lot of knowledge in the transportation and automotive space. But one story that I think our listeners would find very interesting is your shift. I don't know if you mind telling everyone how you, because you were a software engineer for NASA.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Most people aspire, they work their whole lives to become a NASA software engineer. And you somehow became a software engineer, but then you started slinging cars at the local car dealership.
Right.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us that story about how you went from being a software engineer to starting CarVenture.com, which is your startup?
Yeah, sure. I'll keep it brief. So I was I started at NASA as a software engineer. Right. I was there for about 3 years doing live fire engine testing in their test area. You know, super fun, really great work, really great people. But at the end of the day, you know, a job is a job, whether it's 9 to 5 or 7 to 3, or whether it's NASA or somewhere else. And my passion has always been with cars and people. And I had always wondered, you know, what would it be like to work at a car dealership, to own a car dealership? Because I had bought and sold cars, you know, flipped cars off of Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace and things like that. And eventually I just got to a point where I said, okay, it's now or never. So I started working at a local car dealership group, a family-owned dealer, super great experience. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I went online and read things about working in a car dealership and kind of expected a rough working environment, and nothing could be further from the truth. It was a wonderful environment. Turns out I'm pretty good at car sales. So I was there for a little while just to get a taste of the business and see what it looks like. And then I went and started my own independent used car dealership and was selling my own cars. It was just me. It was very tough work trying to manage everything, but I did it. I learned a lot. And in the end, I said, well, wait a second. Why don't I take the two things that I know? I know cars and I know software. Why don't I put the two together? And from that, CarVenture.com was born. And so right now, if you look at it, it's just a car shopping platform, not too similar or very similar rather to some of the other platforms, but The differences come on the back end. So if you were a dealer, you would be more interested in how CarVenture sources its data and doesn't charge you for it versus some of the more the larger platforms that are out there.
Very interesting, because for many people, they get into the car sales business because they can't really find anything else. That's what I've heard from a lot of car dealers, but they end up, you know, being fascinated with it and, you know, love the interaction with people and yeah. so forth. So I'm sure you have a lot of good stories there, right?
Yeah, I'll just say from a high level, I know that car dealerships and used car salesmen, that all kind of gets a negative vibe in the news or in media or just in conversation. But I actually have a lot of love for car dealerships, because when you get into the automotive retail world, everyone can tell you a story about someone who started out sweeping the lot or washing the cars and just, you know, work their way up. And now they own a dealership, or they own several dealerships, or they are managers. And I just think that, you know, that is just so important. That is such an American story. And I just love that. And I know that for every dealer out there who, you know, doesn't have great pricing policies, or, you know, there's a story that maybe they yank somebody around on a deal, you know, I promise you there are 10 dealerships who are working very hard to please their customers, who are very aware of the Carvanas and the Vrooms and all the things that are changing in automotive. So yeah, I have a super soft spot for the
Yes.
For
I mean, that's one thing we've seen over the past years, is that a lot of car or manufacturers, sorry. And obviously, you know, this was all started by Tesla, copied by all the new EV startups that are coming out there, Rivian, and so forth, wanting to sell their cars directly to consumers, kind of skipping this dealership model. I guess in your opinion, right, could you ever imagine yourself buying a car without having to go to a dealership? Like, what do you prefer now that you've been in the business? I mean, what are some of your thoughts there?
So listen, I'm a software guy, a tech guy, and a car guy. I feel like I'm obligated to like Teslas. Yeah, I mean, Teslas are super phenomenal cars, great product. The one thing that kind of spooks me, and this is full disclosure, I don't own a Tesla, but I have read, and people that I have spoken with, is the service appointments. You know, that a lot of the service appointments are great when they come to you and they do the service, but I've also heard a lot of negative experiences about, hey, you know, I'm waiting 4 weeks to get a service appointment. Or just, you know, it's not like if you have an F-150 or a new Mach-E, you can pull into any dealership anywhere, no appointment, and get service. And so I definitely think there is a role for the dealerships going forward. I've also heard stories where customers would buy, you know, a very, very expensive luxury car, and it would have some issue, some kind of a defect, and the dealership would actually end up going to bat for the customer against the manufacturer.
You're absolutely right. Because I know that, and look, I think the good thing about Tesla, and, you know, I even saw Elon tweet today that Tesla is getting into the collision repair business, because I know some of their customers have been having issues with those third-party dealerships. But I will say, this whole dealership model is a bit confusing for the average consumer, right? Because, you know, let's say, for instance, you go to your neighborhood Ford dealer, you buy, like you were saying, an F-150 car that costs anywhere from, you know, $50,000 up to $80,000. So you're spending a good amount of money. Dealership tells you, hey, do you want this, you know, insurance or this protection, this warranty, right? And in many of those cases, it's actually not, you know, being offered from the manufacturer. In some cases, it's offered by a third-party company.
Right.
Customer comes back to the dealership one day and it's like, hey, I'm having this issue. Is it covered under warranty? And then there's a bit of confusion. So I'm assuming that's what you're referring to, right?
Yeah. I think for me, what I see, what it comes down to for the future of dealerships is just offering a consistent shopping experience across multiple stores in the same brand, and then even across different brands. it's not uncommon that, you know, every town has like a main road where there's three or four dealerships, five or six, and you can walk into each one of those different dealers and they'll all have different policies. One may advertise prices on the internet, on the website. Some of them might not even show prices. Some may have a no haggle policy. Some may say, you know, actually you can make an offer. And so I think when you look on the used car side, at least, why CarMax and Carvana have been so successful is they're able to come in and offer a consistent shopping experience, which is very similar to what Tesla does. So I think the challenge going forward is just which dealerships with which OEMs can emerge, you know, to move into the digital retailing even more and offer a consistent shopping experience.
Yes. Well, that's a good segue into our first topic for today's show, which is about 100 Ford dealers are spinning off the Bronco brand. Now, I don't know if you have any opinions on this Bronco brand.
Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah. I want one.
Yeah. Well, what do you love about the Bronco brand?
I just love that they brought it back and they did a really good job. I love that they have all of the aftermarket parts you can bolt on, all of the stuff you can customize and not void the factory warranty. I just think there's been a huge opportunity and a huge gap in the marketplace for a long time, because if you are a shopper who is buying a Jeep, right, a Jeep Wrangler, Jeep Wrangler is pretty much your only option. There are not a lot of other vehicles, maybe the Land Rover Defender, maybe a G-Wagon, which those may be out of your price range, you know, that kind of go after the same market segment as the Wrangler. And so I think competition's great. I think the Bronco's awesome. I love that they went with the smaller displacement turbocharged engines there. That's the EcoBoost. I'm just really excited for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, all these automakers really have to be thanking these three companies for all the innovation that's been happening over the past few years. Tesla, obviously, because they, you know, revolutionized the electric vehicle and made it into a very desirable vehicle. But the two other brands would be Jeep and Subaru, because I've seen so many consumers gravitate to their vehicles because of that rugged design. And, you know, it's very appealing to consumers right now to have those types of vehicles. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. But I've seen like the styling of these vehicles with even like Toyota and Honda. I think with Honda, we've seen it with the Passport. Toyota, we've seen it with the redesign of the Highlander and the RAV4, I believe.
Their FJ Cruiser that they had also a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So it's this very like rugged, I'm going out to the wilderness type of SUV, but really I'm just driving to Lowe's or the grocery store. But, you know, it's a very appealing look to consumers. So it was very interesting that they brought back the Bronco. I mean, I'm assuming that the reason why it was discontinued was because of OJ. Their fault. But what I think is really interesting is that dealers actually came out to Ford and said that they wanted to create a separate showroom concept. So as I'm sure you guys are all aware, you know, if you wanted to buy a Bronco, you probably go to a Ford dealership, or you go online to, you know, a Ford dealership's website and find the vehicle. But, you know, they're kind of shifting this brand into a bit of a spinoff. So these showrooms are going to be near connected to existing Ford dealerships, and they're going to feature the SUV's horse logo instead of the Ford logo. They're also going to give these dealers that actually create these new showrooms additional Bronco units to sell. Now, an initial interest in the vehicle has been strong. I think in Q1, they sold about 24,000 Bronco Sport crossovers. They still haven't released the entire lineup.
That's the only thing that kind of frustrates me, is that I've seen multiple people online who say, oh man, I was really excited about the Bronco, but I saw one in person and it's terrible. This is a Bronco? Like, that's not a Bronco. And you have to point out, hey, that's not the Bronco. That's the Bronco Sport. And so I think that's created a little confusion.
I mean, I still think the Bronco Sport looks pretty sick.
Oh yeah, no, the Bronco Sport is a good looking little SUV, I guess you would call it. And I've seen some of the tests. It's also very capable.
And I know Ford is also working, and I think this is what's going to be a big seller for them, is a Bronco-based pickup truck. I think in 2024, they're speculating for that. But I so the thing is, Ford wanted to focus on the product when they were relaunching the Bronco nameplate, but the dealers actually came out and made clear that they were willing to make significant upgrades to their dealerships to promote the vehicle. As you were saying, right, we're in this era where I think we're going to see car dealerships radically change, right? This is absolutely in the right direction because consumers are used to going to a Tesla store now where they have three vehicles on display and you can kind of, you know, poke around at those three vehicles, right. Make an order if you have to. You don't have to actually go through the whole lot. Like I know back in the day you used to go through a whole lot and kind of pick out which car you wanted. I think this is in the right direction because, you know, I think Jeep is also doing their own like brand specific dealerships.
Yeah, I've looked briefly at the Jeep one. I've seen the Bronco store, some of the renders in greater detail. I think it's absolutely the right move. I mean, really, they're selling that shopping experience, that off-road rugged experience. I mean, the stores have a fire pit. So they're creating a place where you want to come back. You want to look at the accessories in person, maybe have the dealer install them, you know, get all of your service done, have a cool place to hang out. I think it's 100% the right move.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, when you think about Ford, right, they actually sell, and I don't have the statistic with me in front of me, so don't quote me, but I know that Ford sells a higher percentage, or they sell more luxury vehicles technically by dollar amount than Lexus does because of the Ford F-150.
Right. I was about to say the F-150 is a luxury vehicle now. Yeah.
100%. It is a luxury vehicle. Yeah. A lot of people don't think that, but it actually is, especially now when you look at inventory, right. And how the lack of inventory is driving prices of the F-150 and other pickup trucks.
Oh, you know, everything, the chip shortage, right. That has been so interesting to see. Just one small story. I had a vehicle when I had my own dealership. It was a truck. It was a Ram truck. I just could not sell it. It was the very last one. So I was winding down the dealership side, working more on the web platform, the Carventure car shopping side. And I still had this truck in stock and I just could not sell it. And this was around the fall, the end of 2019. So I just said, okay, I'll just buy it myself and I'll just keep it. Great truck. It was a Ram Sport, you know, big orange, lots of personality. Anyways, fast forward to COVID hits, the pandemic hits. It's like spring, early summer 2020. I listed the truck back up for sale as a personal seller, as a private seller. And I sold it within like 24 hours, I think. I had so many people asking questions, wanting to buy it. A guy drove in from out of state to come buy it. And it's just crazy that in such a short amount of time, you know, I couldn't dump this truck, you know, at a significant discount. And then not even, you know, 6 months later, I sold it at a premium, which was crazy.
Why do you think that is? Because many people have been floating around this idea that people are bored and they have nothing to do, nowhere to go. And they're like, hey, let me just go buy a new car. But there has to be something else. Like, it's not just boredom that's going to get someone out to drive to another state to get a pickup truck.
I think maybe that and just, you know, not where I am, most people own vehicles, but I can see where if you are in a place where you rely on mass transit, buses and subway, when there's a pandemic going on, maybe you're not as interested in taking the subway or taking the bus. And you think, well, maybe I should buy a car to drive.
Yeah.
And that
I think there is also this misconception, at least, you know, what I heard from some people was this misconception at the beginning of the pandemic that, there's a pandemic, so cars must be cheaper because no one's buying cars.
Right.
And this rumor, I think, stuck around for a few months where people were thinking, hey, I'm getting a good deal at the car dealership because no one's buying cars because there's an economic recession.
Yeah.
but it was quite the opposite.
I have been in pretty regular contact with a couple of dealerships, and I've had multiple people tell me that certain months in 2020 were some of their best months ever in terms of units sold, which is just not what you would expect.
Yeah, and those are really profitable sales for dealers, right? Because usually in normal times, and you know, let me go back like 2 years, right? 2 years ago, incentives were actually at record highs at a lot of OEMs, right? So they were giving a lot of incentives to get people to buy these cars. Nowadays, they're virtually giving no incentives, and a lot of dealerships are selling most of their vehicles at close to MSRP.
Yep.
So they're not really discounting a lot either.
I saw someone on Twitter saying the new Cadillac Escalade, beautiful truck, by the way, they are giving no discount. And if it doesn't sell, and if you don't buy it within 24 hours, they ship it to Miami and it goes for $10,000 over. So, you know, that's just one small sample, but that's just really interesting.
No, that's crazy. But wait, back to this Ford piece real quick. Like you were saying, I do think this is the right move because, you know, the Bronco brand and the Mustang brand, and the reason why they're using it for the EV is that those brands by themselves have a lot of holding power with consumers, especially when you're thinking about this Bronco relaunch and how the vehicles are, you know, very competitive with Jeep. Jeep has been, I mean, Jeep is basically, it's called Stellantis now, right?
Right.
Usually I say FCA. I mean, if you go into an FCA dealership, right, or a Stellantis dealership, you're grouping Jeep with Chrysler and Ram and some of these other brands that might not be as appealing to consumers. Or, you know, it's kind of establishing like its own brand, right? Jeep has its brand. It has its legacy. Doesn't make a lot of sense to group it with those other dealerships. I see Ford kind of doing the same thing, separating Bronco, maybe even creating like an EV only, you know, flagship brand, which might be kind of interesting. Yeah. So it'll be certainly something to see if any other OEMs try to emulate that model in the future.
Did you see where, so Jeep every year does the Easter Jeep Safari, where they unveil a couple of concept vehicles for interesting things that they might do in the future? So
I didn't see it. Okay. Is it up online somewhere?
But this year though, when they did it in Moab, Utah, Ford actually crashed the event and they showed up with, I think, five different Broncos, all customized and lifted, and kind of crashed Jeep's Easter Safari, which I think is just amazing.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. This happened about 2 weeks ago. That's
funny. I know this podcast is sponsored by Ford still, right?
Yes, it is.
Right. Yeah, need to pull some strings and get us a Bronco or maybe a Mach-E. We'll do a test drive review, take some
videos.
Yes,
please. We'll talk to our folks over at Ford. And speaking of which, we got to take a little quick break, you know, here in the podcast to run an ad. But we'll be right back talking about Domino's. We're going to shift gears, man. We're going to shift gears. Talk about autonomous pizza deliveries launching in Houston. So stay tuned. Inside Transportation, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Marino, joined by my guest co-host, Christopher Niblett. That's how you say your name, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, great.
You can Christopher imagine Niblett, growing
who
up.
He says he's drinking a blonde ale as we are.
It's at Cahaba Brewing, local brewery south of Birmingham.
Nice. It's very nice. Good. Yes. Well, do you eat a lot of pizza, Chris?
Yes. And I know that this next one is about Domino's. And I have to say, I love Domino's. I have the app. We eat Domino's way too much.
Yes. How would you feel if a robot actually delivered your Domino's pizza? Would you use Domino's more frequently, less frequently? What are your thoughts there? I'm not really a Domino's guy, so I'm curious.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see that. That would certainly get a lot of attention if, you know, there's a robot parked out on the street and you go out and all the neighbors are like, what in the world is happening here? I mean, a pizza robot, I think, is generally a good idea.
Yeah. So Domino's announced this partnership with Nuro, and I'm sure you've seen these little small autonomous shuttle vehicles.
I'm looking at it right now. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little small boxy kind of car. It's autonomous. They're best known for the R2 autonomous vehicles, which are actually using in Houston right now in partnership with Kroger and CVS to do grocery and pharmacy deliveries. So they're expanding this program to include pizzas. They're starting autonomous pizza deliveries this week as a part of a pilot program. Domino's is going to use the R2 autonomous vehicles to make deliveries from one store, the Woodland Heights store in Houston, during certain times and dates. Customers are actually going to need to access their pizzas from the vehicle using a PIN code. Cash customers won't be able to actually receive one of their pizzas from the robot because it has to be prepaid. So they first announced this partnership in 2019. Nuro recently secured about a $500 million investment round from some prominent companies, including Woven Capital, which is the mobility investment arm of Toyota Motor Corp.
Interesting.
Now, what I think is really interesting about autonomous pizza deliveries, which seems so stupid, right? It might be like, why are you even talking about this on a transportation podcast? Now, this is going to be the critical small steps we have to take to get autonomous driving embraced by a wider segment of the population. Because when you think about autonomous vehicles up until this point, a lot of the talk has been about shuttles, shuttling people around, ride-hailing services, and the like. Now, obviously, right now, things have kind of shifted. A lot of people aren't going into the office anymore. A lot of people aren't traveling anymore. So I think some of those developments when it comes to shuttles and taxi services, they're not going to be as relevant to a lot of consumers at the current moment. But where I do see, you know, autonomy kind of coming into fruition for a lot of Americans is deliveries, because we all get Amazon packages. We all get DoorDash. I think these are going to be the small steps we have to take to get this embraced. And for Domino's, I mean, this is a killer, you know.
Yeah, I mean, on the plus side, you also know that the robot's not going to get a little taste of your pizza on the way to your house. My question is, though, do you have to tip the robot? How does that work?
That's a good question. Yeah. Do you have to tip a robot? I'm assuming, you know, because look, I think, do you think this is going to kill jobs, or do you think this is just going to give more flexibility to Domino's to, let's say, you know, they're having a crazy rush during dinner and it's like, okay, I'm going to have five drivers out there on the field and then five robots. Like, what do you think the mix is going to be?
So I think it depends. I think it depends on, from the regulatory standpoint, you know, what are the markets where they can roll this thing out? Is it just the markets where they are now, or, hey, can they actually scale this thing up and take this all over the country? If that's the case, then yeah, I think that this would take jobs. Something that I'd like to see. Are you familiar with any of the automotive YouTubers? I've seen a couple of videos. I think maybe Rich Rebuilt did one where he took a Chevy Spark. It was Domino's, I believe, had sort of a a custom built Chevy Spark.
I'm very familiar.
Yeah. So
I got to put a picture of that car in the show notes.
Right.
So Domino's, I need to look this one up just to get the exact name. So it's called the DXP. Now, this was a modified Chevy Spark that actually had like a pizza warming oven
built right in the side.
in the back. Yeah, but what were you saying about Rich?
Oh, just when one of these things is, you know, is going to get into an accident, it's going to happen. This would be something great for Rich Rebuilds to go buy from a salvage lot or whatever and rebuild it and try to repurpose it. Not that I'm sure the company would ever let that happen, but that's pretty funny to think about.
Now, do you think this is a fad, or do you think we're actually going to see autonomous pizza robots make deliveries around? Because I think, you know, obviously we've been having a lot of conversations in society about inequity, right? And, you know, many people who, you know, are lower down the, you know, they might just be starting off their careers and, you know, they find a gig kind of delivering pizzas, making, you know, $10 to $20 an hour. I just think it's interesting because, you know, the Domino's is obviously going to save a lot of money if they didn't have to have their drivers out and about making these pizza deliveries. But at the same time, I feel like there could be some backlash because it's like, hey, this is weird. I'm having a robot kind of deliver my pizza. I don't know if this is the right thing for me to be doing.
Yeah, right? I mean, this is, in my mind, this is not that much different from the self-checkout at your local grocery store that has been in place for the last, what, five or 10 years. And it was the same conversation then. And eventually it may all go to self-checkout and all self-driving pizza robots. I don't think it's a fad in the long term. I'll just be very curious to see what it looks like if they're able to scale these things up to other cities, or if this is just like a pet project to get hype.
Absolutely. Speaking of autonomy, I'm sure you're familiar with Cruise Automation, which is a
General
subsidiary
Motors.
Of GM.
Right.
So Cruise actually is partnering with the Dubai Roads and Transportation Authority to become the sole provider of self-driving taxis and ride-hailing services through 2029. Cruise is going to begin operations in 2023 in Dubai. And they plan to have about 4,000 functioning vehicles in fleet. And by the way, these vehicles are you've seen the Cruise Origin, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yeah, kind of reminds me of something, the Will Smith iRobot movie, where you're in the car and there's no steering wheel. That's kind of what I think of when I see it.
Yeah. So these 4,000 vehicles they're actually adding to fleet are going to be the Origin vehicles. They're establishing a new Dubai-based company to, you know, operate these cars. So it's going to be a fully autonomous vehicle. Like you said, no steering wheels, no pedals, can reach highway speeds. Dubai wants to cut transportation costs by about 25% and ensure 25% of all trips in the city are taken by self-driving transport in 2030. Now, what I thought was very interesting about this arrangement was that Dubai is actually going to have an exclusivity deal with Cruise. We haven't really seen anything like this where a government is signing one deal with one company to deal with and saying, okay, you're going to be providing us, you know, self-driving vehicles, self-driving shuttles, whatever. It's a really interesting move.
Yeah, that's... I wonder what the thought process is there to have more control, because you would think that they would want multiple companies, more competition, you know, better technology, better software, better hardware. That is interesting. I wonder what the thought process was there for that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with control. It is, like they said, you know, the financial details haven't been revealed, but it's the first agreement of its kind. But I know that obviously in the US we believe in fair market and any company just kind of coming into the realm and you know starting up, but if anything, dealing with one company might actually be better for a more wider rollout. That's my opinion on this, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not good to have a monopoly. Monopolies aren't good for the consumer. But when it comes to this groundbreaking new technology, if, let's say, Cruise works very closely with the government to, you know, roll out these vehicles throughout in their cities, in the country, you know, it'll be very interesting to see if it's actually going to accelerate. The other thing I was going to say is that having a close relationship with government entities when you're rolling out self-driving technology is absolutely critical. And as a result of this, if they do have a very close arrangement, it actually might benefit, you know, the rollout of the technology in the country. So those are just kind of my thoughts.
Right. I'll say that the distant horizon of transportation just generally looks sort of bleak for automotive enthusiasts. Like, if you really love just driving a car, and particularly, you know, a stick shift manual transmission, it doesn't look great.
I don't know if any major OEMs still offer manual transmissions, right?
I think some of the sports cars, yeah. I will say something that does get me excited is Porsche is, it looks like they are trying to develop something that they're calling the e-fuel, like a synthetic fuel to try to help preserve the internal combustion engine. So maybe in the future, when we're all getting pizzas delivered and your Tesla drives itself and it doesn't have a steering wheel, you can still get out the old Porsche 911 or the Chevrolet Camaro or what have you, put the e-fuel in it and go make a day of it.
I have a very bleak vision, and you know, you might want to cover your ears for this one.
Oh no.
But I think that by the end of our lives, we're going to see completely autonomous roads, highways, and there's going to be set times where if you want to drive, like let's say, okay, during rush hour, it's going to be only autonomous vehicles are allowed on the roads. Now, at this point, autonomous vehicles are going to be mainstream, right? So, you know, you'll find them everywhere. And they might say, okay, but from, you know, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on a Sunday, if you do have an old classic car or something that uses...
you can get it out and go for a drive. Engine, right.
You know, you can go out and drive. I think that's the only way
that's
be able to roll out autonomous vehicles and have these worlds coexist.
That's the Rush song, Red Barchetta, where the singer gets the car out and goes for a drive in the story. I think that's a good idea. Certain times, maybe certain lanes. I also think maybe it's going to take longer than what everyone thinks, because I just think about where I am in the Southeast. There are a lot of back roads. There are a lot of edge cases where an autonomous system is going to struggle. And
right. And
I think that there will always be a case for, okay, driver, you have to take the steering wheel and you have to take control now, because I don't know where's the pothole and where does the road end. And, you know, this is just a really, really rough edge case.
Yeah, I think level 5, and that's like fully autonomous, self-driving without any, you know, you can basically drive the car anywhere. It's going to take a while to get there for those reasons you mentioned. You know, obviously on a highway, something paved, something where, you know, there's thousands of commuters passing through each day, and you can kind of guess what the traffic patterns are going to be. You know, that's a good case for autonomy. But then if you're going out to the boondocks of America,
that's
not saying that you live in the boondocks, but I'm
okay,
saying
Johan,
like,
okay.
You know, the other day I was in, I went on a road trip. So I drove out from California, went all the way up the California coast.
Nice.
Through Nevada.
Okay.
And I was going to Idaho. That was the final destination. But between Reno and Tahoe area, all the way to Boise, Idaho, which is where I was driving, there's absolutely nothing there.
Right.
And some of the roads are not paved. Like, they are just, you know, not paved roads. So I was thinking, man, this would be great to go on this road trip and not have to, you know, have your hand on the steering wheel. That would be incredible. I could have been doing other stuff while, instead of driving, I could have been just chilling, watching a movie, relaxing. But at the same time, I was like, man, I don't know if anyone even knows these roads exist. And if so, like, how would you know that this car is going to stay on the road?
So, right. So I'll just say that there are, like, the people that live there know that those roads exist. And I just don't think it's going to be as cut and dry as, you know, at the end of our lives or at some certain date that's not too far out, every car will be self-driving. There'll be no steering wheels. So all on the same topic, though, about driving, have you seen some of the videos that have been going around social media recently about the Tesla cars? The, I guess it's the autopilot or the self-driving, almost getting into some pretty bad accidents.
Yes, yes, the FSD. Yeah. What are your thoughts on full self-driving with Tesla?
I mean, I think it's incredible. I was really excited about the idea of buying a Tesla. And just like you said, you know, hey, I can go on a long road trip and not have to drive or not have to have my hands on the wheel. But that's kind of scary. I'll say that I have had many debates in the past with my wife about, hey, the full self-driving will be safer than a human because it's always paying attention. And she was a little more skeptical. And now watching the video, I can't help but feel maybe I'm also a little bit skeptical about just some of these edge cases. But I guess in the end, you just have to trust Elon Musk because I'm not him and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been of the camp that this is a driver assistance tool. This isn't a full self-driving system. What Tesla has right now, even with, you know, the FSD beta, it's still like a level 2, maybe, you know, a little bit inching toward level 3, but it's still very much a level 2 driver assistance tool at this moment.
Right.
Right. It's very possible that this beta can evolve and become a full self-driving system that can operate at a level 4, level 5. Is it level 5? No. Is it right for Tesla to call this software full self-driving?
You know, that's... What's your opinion? Say it.
No.
Careful, Johan. You don't want to get canceled by Tesla
look,
crowd.
I'm going to get canceled already, I know. And look, I have a lot of good friends that are, you know, Tesla enthusiasts who are incredibly, you know, passionate about FSD and the vision. And I see it, right? And I think it's actually a good thing that they're putting this technology on, you know, cars out there in the wild. Absolutely. I think if people want to be using this software, they have every right to use it. But to call it full self-driving when it's not.
Right.
Like, literally, you cannot take your hands off the wheel and watch a movie or read a book, right? That's just
That's sort of what Elon is known for, right? Is just not only introducing phenomenal products and really driving entire industries forward with SpaceX and Tesla, but he does tend to overpromise. And I so much don't mind that because I think he's once in not just a generation, but in multi-generations. But I have seen where a lot of automotive personalities, prominent automotive personalities on Twitter and online have been very critical. And to me, it's not a if case, it's an and case. It's like, yes, Elon does stretch the truth sometimes and does maybe advertise or, maybe gets a little too optimistic with his deadlines and the capabilities, but he also does introduce, you know, industry changing technologies that really, you know, that push the needle forward. So
yeah, and I think what is very sad about the discourse or the conversation about Tesla on Twitter and some of these other social channels is that people are very either for what he's doing or against, and it shouldn't be like that, right? It should be, okay, we have to acknowledge how groundbreaking these products are, like you were mentioning, right? Tesla, just having these electric vehicles capable of that type of performance, FSD, there's not really any other automaker that has that type of functionality available for consumers to use, right? And, you know, like I was kind of saying, right, if I'm on a long road trip and I just need to take my hands off the wheel for a little bit, or I just want to take my feet off the pedals for a little bit, and I just want to enjoy the view and you know, continue to monitor the car. It's absolutely a great thing that they have that FSD available. But my only gripe or my only complaint is it's not full self-driving. Like, it's just the way it is, right? It's like, unless I can just
I think
take
the Cadillac name, isn't it Cadillac or General
Super
Motors?
Cruise?
The Super Cruise. That is a great name. That is very descriptive. I feel like very accurate for what it is.
Right. I would even say Autopilot. Is a good name.
100%.
And maybe they should have called this product like Autopilot Plus. But I guess the one positive out of all of this is that most Tesla owners aren't dumb. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they most likely know the capabilities of this software. And while I don't agree that they should be calling it full self-driving, my hope, if you're spending, you know, anywhere from $35,000 to $120,000 on a Tesla, and you're paying for this FSD upgrade, and you're paying $10,000, my hope is that you know what the limitations of this software are and use it responsibly.
Yeah.
But do I think, like, there's some people out there saying, man, this software shouldn't even be available.
I have seen
that.
And
I'm like,
yeah,
that's a bad thing, right?
Right.
Because, like, I should be able, if I have $10,000 and I want to install this software on my vehicle and basically, you know, be able to use it for what it is, I should be able to do that.
Right.
Right. But I have to acknowledge, as a consumer, I know what the limitations are and I know, you know, what it's capable of. Obviously, if this was a more mainstream product, if let's say this was being installed on every freaking car out there in the world, and you know, that's a different story. But if we're talking about this very, and I would even say niche, right? Because not every Tesla owner ends up purchasing the FSD upgrade,
right?
Or even the enhanced autopilot upgrade.
Or the ludicrous speed.
Yeah, or ludicrous speed, right? It's like, okay, if you get ludicrous speed and you're, you know, getting all these speeding tickets, I mean, you should know what the limitations are. You should be responsible. So I think FSD, my only complaint is the name. You know, people should use it responsibly. That's just my opinion. You know, but I think it's ultimately a step forward when you have this technology available in cars that you can purchase out there, right?
I think the biggest thing that I give Elon and Tesla credit for, in my mind, and this is just my opinion, is Elon literally with Tesla forced the entire automotive industry to take the next step. And the evidence of that is, look at General Motors, who went from canceling the EV1 and all these conspiracy theories. I think there's a video or a book or something about who killed the EV1, went from canceling the EV1 in the 90s to here where 30 years later, and they've taken one of their most iconic brands, gas guzzling brands, Hummer, and have reintroduced the Hummer EV. And I think that all of that credit pretty much goes, you know, squarely back to Tesla and to Elon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you. And like I was saying, you know, at the top of the program, you know, we have a lot to thank Tesla for, right? Because they've radically shifted how a lot of manufacturers are envisioning the next 10 years. And in turn, also helping the planet, right? With the, you know, mass adoption of electric vehicles. So it is a very interesting topic because there are some people who are just very, no, we can't be celebrating these advances in technology. I'm not for that. Speaking of electric cars, you actually sent me a really interesting, and I hadn't caught this, but this is a new pickup truck that's apparently coming out from Canoo, which is an EV startup based in Los Angeles. So they actually, I don't know if this vehicle has a name yet. But
I think
basically,
it's just called the pickup, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just called like the pickup truck. And the production version of this pickup truck is going to be open for pre-orders in quarter 2, 2021, with deliveries starting as early as 2023. So it has a lot of interesting, unique features. Well, first of all, let's talk about this design. Chris, how would you describe this design of this pickup truck?
It reminds me of a Volkswagen van almost, except it has a truck bed instead of the last half. It's almost like a cab over design. I'm looking at our show notes, you know, here at the press release. One thing that we don't show, and I'm not sure if you've seen this, Johan, have you seen the interior of this truck? Behind the steering wheel, where normally there is a dashboard, there's just open space, which I think is even more impressive than all of the modular stuff on the inside. I will say at the same time, something that kind of turns me off about it is that I believe it's only a two-seater. So I would really need this to be a four-seater vehicle, you know, to actually be considered. But hey, maybe I'm not the target buyer for this.
It is interesting because I do see that open space concept. I wonder how many approvals they have to get with, you know, the safety agencies to clear something like that.
You know, I had read online some speculation that maybe that was the way that they got the clearance, is because creating the space that's like a big buffer zone. So maybe that's actually more safe.
You have a good point. Yeah. Now, what I think is interesting about this company, Canoe, is that they're coming out with like an SUV style kind of boxy van that's going to be electric, and they have a pickup truck. So I clearly think this company is gearing to selling these vehicles, not just to consumers, but selling them in fleet, which I think is going to be super powerful when you think about the next 10 years as companies try to, you know, have a more sustainable footprint. They're going to be looking for vehicles like this one and their, you know, boxy kind of van. Also, you know, what I think is interesting about this pickup truck is that there's a modular bed with space dividers, which is really interesting if you're, you know, trying to load up the back of their pickup truck with some stuff. But I also saw this like camping extension for this truck. So it kind of has this dual, like the camper shell. Now let's talk about that real quick, this camper shell, because I have seen a lot of people during the pandemic do this van life movement where, you know, they'll live in their van or their pickup truck
down by the river
amount of time. Yeah. Yeah. Chris and Farley, you know, on my road trip that I recently did, I saw a lot of RVs out there, a lot of people living out of their vans. So in a way, I also feel like they're kind of appealing to that audience who are looking for a car that would be suitable enough to live in.
Every Instagram influencer is going to have one of these.
No, absolutely. And the other thing I was going to say is that if anything, I think the future, right, we're going to see more people adopt this mobile lifestyle, especially as housing prices go up, right? So it's just a super interesting concept. I know Canoe, they've been working on using one of their boxier vans, like retrofitting it as a food truck, which is like interesting.
I have not seen that. No.
I know Canoe is a publicly traded company now. They SPAC'd. I know a lot of EV companies that have SPAC'd recently.
Yeah, I was about to say my favorite thing about this truck is that it's actually real. Cough, you know, the Nikola Badger.
Are you not waiting for your Nikola Badger? I'm still waiting for mine.
I just wonder what happened to all those people that put down the deposits on the Badger.
It's a good thing to check in on. Yeah.
Right.
Didn't they have like half a million, like, you know, pre-orders or some crazy number like that?
What was General Motors thinking? But yeah, this little truck, this is super cool. I love the modular.
So is it a dope or a nope?
Oh, it's a dope, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the little slot outs, sidestep storage. That's just so cool. Yeah, this is a very, very cool truck. I see people who are the quirky buyers who, you know, like the Volkswagens, the vans, the Volvos and such, buying these. This is really cool.
Yeah, now, how do you think this stacks up against Rivian's R1T?
I think maybe it's a different market. I see the Rivian as being more trying to compete with F-150 buyers, more of like a mainstream type truck. I see this being as more of a Subaru type, you know, niche buyer, maybe not in direct competition with the Rivian.
It does remind me a little bit of the Subaru Baja.
Yes.
He's familiar with the Subaru Baja?
Yeah, yeah. And then they, even older than that, the Subaru Brat. Yeah.
100%. Yeah, yeah. So it is a very quirky design, which can appeal a lot of consumers. But I definitely think this is more of a fleet kind of buy or pitch to companies saying, hey, because I don't think these canoe vehicles are going to be incredibly expensive. I think for their boxier van, the price sat around like 30-ish K per, you know, for the vehicle. So I think it's a little bit more affordable than the Rivian. The Rivian, I think, is like 70-ish. So it's almost double.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a totally different bar, it seems like.
Yeah. Very, very much luxury. I think Rivian is going for that luxury buyer. This vehicle seems like something a little bit more.
This makes me wonder, you know, if like maybe you could see somebody like a Napa Auto Parts or a Firestone or someone buying this to run local deliveries. But it just makes me wonder if it's meant to be targeted more towards businesses. I guess why are they showing us one in the press release that's, you know, all decked out with all the camping and all of the consumer type stuff?
That's true. Yeah. Cause there is a picture of some guy just chilling by his truck, right next to a fire and has the tent set up and everything.
Well, he's got to update his Instagram account. So
there you go. Yeah. He's an influencer. So anyway, I mean, hey, I think this is it. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, Chris. Where can people learn more about yourself and Car Venture?
Sure. I'm on Twitter, Car Venture Chris, and you can always check out carventure.com or drop me an email, chris@carventure.com.
And we'll put the link in the show notes. But thanks for filling in today for Jason. I know they're big footsteps to fill in.
You know, Jason actually just texted me and said that he's not going to be able to co-host any more of the episodes. And if I want to just fill in, I'm certainly good for it. So,
well, hey, I'll double check with him. But,
Jason,
it's been a pleasure, Chris. This has been great. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Take care. Wow, that was great, dude. Good job.
Oh, was it good?
No, that was awesome.